Today's shir is Sefer Basra, Daf Kuf Samach Tes, to Kuf Ayin, and we will begin on Daf Kuf Samach Tes, Amud Beis, four lines from the bottom. Tanur Rabbanan, Haba Lidun B'Shtar U'B'Chazaka. If there is somebody who's on a property, and he comes to claim that he has ownership of this property, both based on the fact that he has a shtar, indicating that he is the owner of this property, and he also has a chazaka. There's a machlokes rishonim how to define chazaka in this sugya. Does chazaka mean the cheska shaloshonim, a chazaka that somebody is on a property for 3 years with nobody claiming any counterclaim? That is the chazaka that our sugya will be referring to, or the chazaka of our sugya refer to the Kenyan Chazaka. They know that one of the ways a property could be purchased is through a Kenyan Chazaka. We will be learning the sugya primarily according to the understanding that it means Chazaka of Cheska Shaloshanim, that somebody's on the property for three years. So again, one, they have a claim of a shtar and a Chazaka. Which is the claim that will prevail, that based on that claim he will keep the field? Nidin b'shtar, the very Rebbe. According to Rebbe, the shtar is the claim that will prevail. Whereas Rav Shimon Gamliel Oimer, the claim is b'chazaka. And as I began to learn the sugya, I thought to myself, where could this case be relevant in our world? And then I found that the Sham Tzion Ba'alocha quotes a Shail Sechuvis Beis Lechem Yehuda that discusses the following scenario. There was a situation where there was a piece of property or a business where a son, one of somebody's children, a son, was on that property for the years of Chazaka, but the shtar, the deed, was written in the name of the father. And now the father passed away. The son who was on the property, who had a chazaka, said that this property is mine, and the chazaka proves that it's mine. I, the shtar, says that it belonged to my father, and therefore since it belonged to my father, it belongs to his estate. That shtar, he said, was for whatever reason, when this property or business was bought, it was made up between my father and I that the property should be on my father's name. But really, it belongs to me, and the chazaka is what backs up my claim. Whereas the other brother's claim, no, there's a shtar that clearly indicates that this property belongs to our father, or this business, whatever, belongs to our father, and therefore it should be part of the estate of our father, which should be divided amongst us. And that really is the situation that we're speaking about. We have a shtar and a chazaka that seem to contradict each other. What do we follow? Says the Gemara, but my Kamefki, and the Gemara attempts to understand what is the machlokes. It's interesting to point out, the Rishonim point out, that here we have Rebbe arguing with his father of Shimon Gamliel. And the Meretz Chayis and others point out, from here we see then when it comes to Torah, a son is allowed to disagree with his father. However, the Taz says that even though a son is allowed to disagree with his father in Divrei Torah, he's only allowed to disagree not in the presence of his father. They don't have to agree what the halach is, but the son shouldn't dispute his father in front of him, as we find so many times that the Torah argues on his father, the Rosh. But the Torah didn't argue in the presence of the Rosh. Furthermore, Tosfos and other Rishonim point out that not only do we find the Rebbe argued against his father of Shimon Gamliel, but actually Rebbe's opinion, the son's opinion, is stated before the father's opinion. Rebbe's opinion is stated before of Shimon Gamliel's opinion. Ask the Rabbi Kamsky, what they're arguing about? Kasher Avdimi Amar, the Machloikis is regarding the subject we discussed at the end of the previous year. But Oisius Nictus from Assyria Kamiflagi, can a document be transferred, just can a sale be affected just by the transfer of a document? Where Rav Shimon ben Gamliel suffer. Rav Shimon ben Gamliel's opinion is ein oisius niknas b'mesira. You can't just pass over a document. Rav Shimon ben Gamliel's opinion is that you can't just pass a document that it should affect the kinyan, and therefore here, where we have a situation that the person is only holding a document, that isn't a proof of ownership because the document was passed to him, because the halacha is that a shtar is not, a property is not transferred just by the transference of the shtar. Rebbe Sovereign, Rebbe is of the opinion that Oisius Niklas from Masira, that a property can be transferred just by transferring the shtar. Again, the Rishonim debate how to understand the Gemara. One way of understanding the Gemara, which is essentially the simplest way of understanding the Gemara, is possession of a shtar, which represents that somebody transferred me the shtar, the raya that I own the shtar, that I own the property or not, and that is the machloikus of Rebbe Rav Shimon Gamliel. Rebbe holds it is, Rav Shimon Gamliel holds it isn't. Another way that some Rishonim explained the Gemara is that the property was first sold to me, and now the shtar with a shtar, and now the shtar is transferred back to the original owner. Will that represent a situation where the property was sold back to its original owner? Rebbe holds it is. Rav Shimon Gamliel holds it isn't. The Rishonim go on to debate. According to the opinion that Oisius Niklas v'Mesira, that just the transference of a shtar represents the transference, represents a transaction, will that, there are two types of shtaros we know. There's a shtar kinyan. As we know, the property can be purchased b'kesef, b'shtar, u'b'chazoka. So the shtar kinyan is the shtar that Rebbe and Rav Shimon Gamliel are debating, is the transference of such a shtar an effective means of kinyan. Whereas a shtar raya, a shtar which is just there to show that I am the owner of a field, that everybody will agree cannot affect a transaction. Whereas there are other Rishonim that say it makes no difference if it's a shtar kinyan or a shtar raya, the transference of either of those types of shtaris is a legitimate way of affecting, is a legitimate way of an affecting a kinyan, according to the opinion that holds Oisius Niklas v'Mesira. Now the question obviously that the Rishonim ask is that if the shtar is not a raya, how could the chazaka be a raya? Didn't we learn earlier in our Masechta, when we learned Parakhesk Sabatim, that the entire strength of a chazaka to show ownership is because the chazaka is backed by a shtar? But here, there is no shtar. The shtar was saying is not a raya. So how could the chazaka be stronger than the shtar? And because of this question, some Rishonim actually say that the definition of chazaka here does not mean the chazaka that we always explained, and we said at the beginning of the show we're going to say is the chazaka of Shal Shonim, rather means a kinyan chazaka, because chazaka without a shtar is meaningless. However, there are other Rishonim that say that even though every chazaka has to be backed up with a taina, in a situation such as this, where a shtar is not a raya, the chazaka itself can be a raya. And in fact, I was thinking, as a raya, as a raya to the, how strong this teretz is that I saw the Achroidim ask a question. If the Gemara is suggesting that the machloikus of Rebbe and Rav Shimon Gamliel is a machloikus of Oisius Niknas b'Mesira, or if Oisius are not Niknas b'Mesira, so why did the Gemara have to, why did the Brice have to speak about such a complicated case? Habor lida b'shtar b'chazoka. The Brice should have just mentioned a simple situation. Can we or can we not affect the kinyan with the transference of a shtar? Why did the Gemara have to show b'shtar b'chazoka? Because the Gemara is trying to teach us, perhaps, what we just quoted some Rishonim as saying, that a chazoka, even though we've said chazoka normally needs a taina behind it, here, the chazaka itself will be strong enough. It's also interesting to note that the Gemara now is suggesting, as it did at the end of the previous shiur, that there's a machloikis if oisyois niknas b'mesira. So I saw that the shaila comes up in a very interesting situation. I asked somebody to buy a lottery ticket on my behalf. He bought a ticket for me, and he gives it to me, and I'm supposed to pay him for whatever it cost to buy that lottery ticket. I didn't have any money on me. And I said to him, I owe you the dollar or whatever it cost for the lottery ticket. And then that lottery ticket is the ticket that wins. I'm holding on to the ticket, but the person who bought the ticket from me says that since I never paid him for the ticket is not mine, it's his. Certainly, if we follow the concept of Oisiois Niknas B'Mesira, since he gave over to me the lottery ticket, and I am holding the lottery ticket, it clearly indicates that I am the owner of the ticket. However, in the previous Ask the Gemara, in the previous shiur, we learned that the Braisa discussed if a shtar hava was lost. The Braisa says it should not be rewritten. And then the Braisa discussed, what about if a shtar mekach, if a bill of sale was lost? Should it be rewritten? And the Gemara quoted a machloikis, the Braisa quoted a machloikis for Chomer Shim Gamliel. And the Gemara at the end of our previous year explained that machloikis, that the reason of Shimon Gamliel holds that even a shtar mekach should not be rewritten, because Rav Shimon Gamliel is of the opinion of Oisius Niknois B'Mesira. Ask the Gemara, in came Plukla the Demar. In the previous year, at the end of the previous year, we explained that Rav Shimon Gamliel's opinion is that Oisius Niknois B'Mesira. And here we're saying that Rav Shimon Gamliel's opinion is ain't Oisius Niknois B'Mesira. Amlai, so you serve a tiff like. That doesn't bother us. It was Rava who explained that Rav Shimon Gamliel's opinion is Oisius Niknois B'Mesira. Abaya certainly has the right to dispute Rava. Amlai, so he said to him, Hach kamin alach. What I meant to ask was a different question. Masnisa la mitarza elka mitarza ma. The only way we were able to explain the braisa that I just quoted, that we learned in the previous year, why Rav Shimon Gamliel holds that a shtar mekach should not be rewritten, is because Rav Shimon Gamliel is of the opinion that Oisius Niknois B'Mesira. If we could now explain that the braisa that we began today's year, an understanding of Shimon Gamliel's opinion in that braisa, is because Rav Shimon Gamliel holds that ain Oisius Niknois B'Mesira, Kash Rav Shimon Gamliel, Rav Shimon Gamliel. How will we reconcile the opinions of Rav Shimon Gamliel? Ella, Amar Abaya, because of this question, says Abaya, we have to say that that Rav Shimon Gamliel's opinion is that Ois Yois Niknes V'Mesira. Hachamai Skina, how will we understand the Machloikis of the Brice that we began with today? With a different case altogether. Kigon Shenimtsim Echemem Karav Apostle, that one of the Eidim signed on the shtar is apostle, is somebody who's apostle to be an aid, or somebody who's a relative. Or plukta, and this machloikis is connected to the machloikis of Rav Meir v'Rabbi Elazar Kamifki, as we've learned in Masech Gittin. This machloikis Rav Meir v'Rabbi Elazar of aid Mesira Karti or aid Mesira Karti. Rav Shimon Gamliel's opinion is that aid Mesira Karti, that who are the Eidim that create the effectiveness of a get? The Eidim who see the husband give the wife the get. Whereas the opinion of Rav Meir is that Eidich Simakarti is the Eidim who sign on the get, who create the effectiveness of the get. And therefore, in this situation, where the Gemara is explaining that the Braisa that we're referring to is referring to a shtar, where we find one of the Eidim is a disqualified Eid, Rebbe's going to hold like Rabbi Elazar, that holds Eide Mesira Karti, that it's the Eidim who watch the delivery of the get. So even though the Eidim signed on the get are apostle, that doesn't disqualify the shtar as long as the Eidim Mesira are fine. Rav Shimon Gamliel, on the other hand, is going to hold like Rav Meir, Dama Eidich Sima Karti. And if there's something wrong with the Eidich Chasima, one of them is a car of apostle, it disqualifies the shtar, and therefore Reb Shimon Gamliel is going to hold, we have to rely on the Chazaka. Ask the Gemara, how can we explain the machloikas that way? Vom Reb Abba, My dahaya Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Elazar agrees, but mezuyif mitaychay shupasel. Even though Rabbi Elazar holds that you don't have to have edich sima, Rabbi Elazar will agree that if you have pasel edim, you can't. The shtar becomes pasel. The reason is because we're concerned that the Bezdin will appoint the same individuals who are the Edech Sima to serve as the Edech Mesira. And even though Rabbi Elazar holds that the Edech Sima aren't important, certainly the Edech Mesira have to be kosher Edim, and we may end up using the wrong individuals to be Edech Mesira. Or that what may happen is that even though there were, Taisus explains, there were kashra edei mesira, Bezdin will rely on the edich sima. They may be easier to identify, to locate, and you should not rely on such edim because they're puzzled. So ask the Gemara, how can we say that the machlokes is where we have pasul edim? Every signed on the shtar, everyone agrees, even if you hold like the opinion of Elazar, that such edim, that such a shtar is disqualified. And actually, this question that I of edim pasul signed on the shtar, I saw it comes up. The Tashbatz says that it's proper that signed to a ksuba, the chassan should sign the ksuba. Some explain the reason is to show that the chassan is serious about this obligation. Others explain that if, when it comes to pay out the ksuba, the husband divorces his wife or he dies, we need to identify that this was the chassan, by the chassan, if the chassan's signature is mekuyim, is certified, that will be enough to make the ksuba that has to be paid out. And the Nachla Shiva, which we know is the authoritative sefer that we follow as far as Hilchos Shtaros is concerned, says that Anu B'nai Ashkenaz, we of European descent, our minig is that the chassan should sign the shtar ksuba. And Rav Ozman, the Shaivel Sechuva Shevet Alevi, actually says that it's proper that we should follow that minig. However, says Rav Moshe, the matter was, we learned in our Gemara, that if somebody signed on a shtar is a Karav apostle, he disqualifies the shtar. We have to be very careful that the chassan, when he signs the ksuba, he should not sign the ksuba in the same place as the edim, because then we'll have a shtar that's one of the, that's posel, and one signed by a person who's posel to be an aid, and it will disqualify the shtar. And in fact, the Nesivis says that what's probably the right thing to do is that the chosen should sign before the Edom. If the chosen signs before the Edom, it's clearly an indication that the shtar has nothing, that this has nothing to do with the Edom. And then when we get kosher edim signing below it, the shtar remains a kosher shtar. Whereas if the chassan signs after the edim, there's a concern that it may be that one can construe that the chassan is signing the shtar as an aid, and the chassan obviously is possible to be an aid on his own ksuba, which as we just learned in our Gemara, everybody would agree that that would disqualify the shtar. And in fact, I saw that the Pais can bring up that this question could come up in another area in a halacha. If a Rav is selling the chametz to a guy, and he puts it to a document, and he wants to strengthen that document by having two edim sign, and now, let's say one of the edim that this Rav asked to sign the shtar is a person who's amongst the people that this Rav is selling the chametz on behalf of him. So the question would be, would that disqualify the shtar and perhaps disqualify the mechira? So the Miches Yitzchak discusses the shaila, and he says that you can't compare the situation of a ksuba to the shtar of Mechiras Chametz. Because he says the shtar of Mechiras Chametz doesn't need Edom signed on it. Because there's no concept of Meshubadim, of mortgaging property, of creating a lien. And therefore, there's no need for Edom. So even if you have Edom signed on the shtar, who may be disqualified, it wouldn't disqualify the shtar. Whereas a ksuba does create a lien, and therefore the need for kosher Edom is greater, and we have to be much more careful that the Edom who signed the shtar should not be disqualified in any way. Of course, the best thing is that if somebody is writing a shtar to sell the chametz, he should use a people who were not included in that particular sale. El Amar Ravina, so says Ravina, Hakol Moedim, everybody's agreeable, Shinkosaba, that if the shtar says, Huzaknaknu Ledosm Shal Edim, we investigated the testimony of these Edim signed on the shtar, V'nimtza Edosim Mizuyafes, and they are not kosher Edim, Shupasol Kidrab Abba. Everybody will agree, even Rabbi Lazar, whose opinion is Edim is Sirikarati, will agree that if there are Edim signed on the shtar that are Pasol Edim, that will disqualify the shtar. And I saw from the Sefer Torah Chaim that says, why does the Rabbi Avinah have to speak about a case where there's a notation in the shtar that Bezdin is pointing out that we know that the Edim signed on the shtar are Pasol Edim? Why couldn't the din that Rabbi Lezer holds, that Rabbi Abba says that Rabbi Lezer will agree that such a shtar is possible because it's mezuyif metoichai, is the same if it has this notation in the shtar or it doesn't? So he explains as follows. We just said, what's the reason that Rabbi Lezer holds that if the Edom that is signed on the shtar that apostle, that shtar will be disqualified, even though Rabbi Lezer is of the opinion that Edom is sirikarti? So we explained, because Rabbi Lezer is concerned that somebody will come to rely on those Edei Chasima to be the Edei Mesira. But here where there's a notation in the shtar, be aware that these Edei Chasima apostle. So nobody's going to come to rely to use them as Edei Mesira, because the shtar clearly indicates, so to speak, don't use them as Edei Mesira. Perhaps in such a case, Rabbi Lezer will say that the shtar is kosher. Teaches us Rabbi Avinah, their Abba's halacha, that Rabbi Lezer holds that if their apostle Edom signed to the shtar is possible, would even apply in such a circumstance also. So, what is the machloikus of Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, says the Gemara? Well, we have a shtar without any Edom at all on it. The Rebbe Savala Kribalazar, Rebbe holds like Kribalazar, Dama Edom Sirikarati, and therefore such a case, is such a shtar, is a valid shtar, and neither the shtar, we can rely on the shtar to prove ownership. Whereas Rabbi Shimon Gamliel Savala Kribalazar, Dama Edom Sirikarati, and if there are no Edom on the shtar is meaningless, and we're going to have to rely on a chazaka. Vibay Seima, another way of understanding the machloikis of Rebbe and Rav Shimon Gamliel, is regarding a subject that we have previously discussed, the issue of moed b'shtar shekosfoy tzorach l'kayma kamiflegi. If a loiva is agreeable that he wrote the shtar, but he says there's a different issue with the shtar, for he says that the shtar, he paid off the shtar. Is the halacha, does such a shtar require kiyum or not? The Rebbe Sofer, Rebbe is of the opinion, moed b'shtar shekosfoy, that a loiva agrees that he wrote the shtar, even though he says that there is a different issue here, for example, that he paid it off already, the halacha is ain't tzarach l'kaymai. Such a shtar no longer requires certification. The shtar is considered a valid shtar. And that's why, in this case, Rebbe will hold that even though the loiva is making a claim against the shtar will still be a kosher shtar. Rav Shimon Gamliel, on the other hand, holds tzarach l'kaymoy, that kiyum is required, and therefore, even though he is moided, without that, you can't rely on the shtar, and you would have to rely on the chazaka. Well, we've discussed this case, I'll mention this quickly. Well, we've discussed this case previously, we've quoted the question that the Rishonim asked, why isn't every moider b'shtar shekosvoy believed with a migui that he could have said that the shtar was mezuyif. So we've explained that a person, a loiva, is concerned to say mezuyif because he knows that the Eidim will come and say that this wasn't a forgery, and therefore we never have a migui called mezuyif. Furthermore, other Rishonim, Tosfos' explanation is that mezuyif is never considered a valid claim because we don't accept the claim of mezuyif. If we see a shtar, we can be concerned that it was paid up, we can be concerned about other issues, but mezuyif is not a concern that the halacha recognizes. Ask the Gemara. So according to the explanation that we're now giving, the machloitis of Rebbe and Rav Shimon Gamliel and the Braisa is if ma'id b'shtar b'kosvei tzorch l'kaimo or not. Ask the Gemara, if chashimin Allah, didn't we learn just the opposite opinions attributed to these tanoim? The Tanya, we learned in the Braisa, shnayim adukim b'shtar. If both the malva and the loiver are holding on to a shtar. And the Farshim say that the word, there's a word called adukim, and there's a word called oichsin. We'll see the word oichsin in a moment. The first Mishnah in the Masechta Bava Metzia, shnayim oichsin betalas. When do we use the word adukim? When do we use the word oichsin? Adukin is used in a situation that's not the actual, that the item that's being held doesn't have any intrinsic value, like a shtar. Whereas oichsin is by a talus, that the talus has its own value. So we have the malva and the loiva both holding on to the shtar. Malva shalihu, the malva said, I was holding on to the shtar, I dropped it, and you found it. The loiva imer, it's indeed was your shtar, and I paid up the shtar, and now it fell down from me. The loch is the sky mashtar b'chasam of the very Rebbe. So even though it's a moid of b'shtar shekosvoy, the loiv is admitting that he wrote the shtar, but he's also claiming he's making a further claim. So Rebbe holds the keem is required, whereas Rav Shimon Gamliel's opinion is yachloiku. So we see just the opposite. And when we learned this machloikis of Rebbe and Rav Shimon Gamliel, the Gemara in Masechta B'Metzia asked the following question. Doesn't Rebbe agree with what we learned in the first Mishnah of Masechta B'Metzia that says, Shtaymach Smetalis, if two people come to court holding on to a talis, each one of them says, I found it first. So the Mishnah told us, this one should swear that he doesn't own less than 50% of this talis. And the other individual should also swear that he doesn't own less than 50% of the talis. And then they divide it. So why does Rebbe hold that when a malva and a loiva are both holding on to a shtar, does the malva collect the full amount as soon as the shtar is mekuyim? Why here isn't the halacha yachloiku? And as the Mefarshim point out, the Gemara preferred to ask the question from the Mishnah rather from Svara, because after Svara we could understand that it belongs to Malva more than the Taloiva. Because a loiva, what would he normally do if he got back the shtar because he paid up? He'd rip up the shtar. But the malva doesn't have any reason to rip up the shtar. So the Gemara's question is still, the Mishnah teaches us yachloiku. Vamar Avraham Nachman. So Rav Avraham Nachman, in answer to this question, said, b'mekuyim, when we're talking about a shtar mekuyim and a chanami, everybody will agree, the kul amalai pligi yachloiku, everybody will agree that it should be divided. Ki pligi, when do we have a machloikis? B'she'en mekuyim. Regarding a shtar that's not mekuyim. Where Rebbe Sover might be shtar shekosu tzorach l'kaima, that if the loiva agrees that he wrote the shtar, you have to be mekayim it, vi mekayim le, and if the shtar will then be mekuyim govi palga, then he will be able to collect half vi loy, and if he can't be mekayim it, chast bamhu, it's considered worthless. On the other hand, Rav Shimon Gamliel Sover might be shtar shekosvoy ain't tzorach l'kaimai. And therefore, whether kiyum was accomplished or not, it makes no difference. The halacha is yachloiku. So here we see that Rebbe and Rav Shimon Gamliel are just the opposite we're explaining them just the opposite of Masechta Bamitzia from the way we're explaining them in Masechta Bamabasra. Because in Bamabasra, Rebbe is holding Moed B'Shtav Shkosvoy, Eid Tzorach L'Kaimoy. And in Masechta Bamitzia, he holds Tzorach L'Kaimoy. And Shimon Gamliel in Masechta Bamabasra, we're explaining, holds Tzorach L'Kaimoy. And in Masechta Bamitzia, we're saying Eid Tzorach L'Kaimoy. Says the Gemara, Epoch, we have to reverse the opinions of the Braisa in Masechta Bamitzia. The Pnei Yeshua asks an interesting question. When we learned the Gemara Masechta Bamitzia of Shnayim Oichs Metalis, we explained that the reason each one swears and keeps half is because indeed it could be they both picked it up at the same moment, and since they picked it up both at the same moment, so maybe they both got it at the same time and then divided the entitled to half. Whereas our Gemara asked the Pnei Yeshua, if the Malva dropped it, it belongs to the Malva. If the Loiva dropped it, it belongs to the Loiva. But there is no possibility that it belongs to both. So how can we compare both situations? So the Pnei Yeshua answers that we have to explain that the case here is that there were Edim that saw the shtar by the Malva, and then there were Edim that saw that the shtar is on the floor. So here too, it's possible that at one point it was by the Malva, and at one point it was by the Loiva, and that's why it's considered a case of Yachloiku. Vibay Seima, Loilam, Loitepach. There's no reason to reverse the opinions. And what is the Machloikis between Rebbe and Rav Shimon Gamliel all about? Hocha Belevaru Kamiflgi. And the Machloikis here is where somebody makes a claim, which he didn't have to make, but he made that claim. Does he have to back it up? Kihadar of Yitzhak by Yosef, which we have such an incident, the Gemara says. Kihadar of Yitzhak by Yosef have a masik by Zuzib Rab Abba. Rav Yitzhak by Yosef had a loan outstanding against Rab Abba. Also kamed Rav Yitzhak Nafcha. And what happened was a loan not put into a document. And they came to Rav Yitzhak Nafcha, Amra, and Rav Abba said to Rav Yitzhak by Yosef, Praticha b'fnei ploini b'ploini. I paid you in front of these two Edom. Amlai Rav Yitzchak. So Rav Yitzchak said, Yava ploini ploini. You claim that you paid up in front of these two Edom. Yava ploini ploini v'yidu. Let these two Edom come and testify that you did and paid up. Amalei. So Rav Abba said to him, Eloi asu. And if they don't come, Loi mehemna, am I not believed? For Kaimelon, don't we know that the halach is that Amavas Chaver be Eidim, that if one lends money to somebody else in front of Eidim, the halach is ain't tzarach l'far be Eidim? So why do I have to bring the Eidim to testify that I paid up in front of them? Amalei, ani kehesh matad masrili. I ani bahish matad masrili. In this matter, I agree with what you said. Domer of Abba, Omer of Ada, Omer of Rav, Haimel Chaver b'fratich b'fnei plani plani. If somebody makes a claim that he paid up in front of two Eidim, Tsarch Shiyavit plenty plenty yidu. You have to bring the Edom to testify that you paid up. Meaning as follows. Had you not said it, that you paid up in front of Edom, you would be believed. And the Meretz Chayis makes an interesting point. He says, how can we have a machlokes between such great individuals? Is anybody a liar in such circumstances? So he explains that they were so engrossed in learning that he forgot that he didn't pay up. They forgot that Abba paid him up. But back to our situation, that you normally don't have to bring Edom that you paid up. But if you said you have Edom, you have to. And that's the case here too. If you wouldn't have said Shtar b'chazaka, if you had a chazaka loan, a chazaka is enough to rely on. But here, because you claim that you have a Shtar, you have to back up what you said according to Rebbe, we're bringing the shtar. According to this interpretation, actually, it turns out, the Rebbe is the machmir. The Rebbe holds that if you make a claim, you have to back up the claim, and you have to bring the shtar. Shungamil says, no, the chazaka is good enough. Even though the Rishonim do indicate that even according to Rebbe, who's saying that if you say b'shtar b'chazaka, you have to bring a shtar, once you bring a shtar, you won't have to bring a chazaka. Because as we explained at the beginning of our shir, the whole strength of a chazaka is built on the shtar. So certainly if you're able to bring the shtar, which you didn't have to bring, but if you bring the shtar, that will cover the need to the Chazaka. But it's very interesting. The Gemara says that if you say you have Eidim, at least according to the opinion of Abba, you have to be able to bring up the Eidim. You have to bring the Eidim. The Gemara Masechta Shavuos on the Mem Aleph Amud Beis speaks about a case of a borrower who produced Eidim, who said, "I paid up in front of Eidim," and he produced those Eidim. But when the Eidim came, they said, "We don't know. We don't know about any such a thing." Rava says that just because he said, "I have Eidim," and he brought the Eidim, but the Eidim did not substantiate his claim, it's not a problem. Because Rava says, "Kol milsadoi ramyalei the inish lava date." Rashi explains that since one is not required to repay his debt in front of Eidim, a borrower can understandably forget who was there when he repaid his loan. The Rach explains that since the halacha doesn't require payment in front of the Eidim, Eidim did not consider the testimony vital, and therefore they might have forgotten what they saw. So now we have to understand, how do we reconcile what Rava says in Masechta Shavuos, well, what we're learning from Rav Abba and Al Gemara. In Al Gemara it says, the Rav Abba says, that if you say that you paid in front of Eidim, even though you don't have to pay in front of Eidim, but once you say it, you have to back it up. So the Rif says that Rav Abba's opinion and Rav's opinion can't be reconciled. Tosfos, however, says that the point, and the Ritva says, that the point in having Rav Abba produce the witnesses was only to substantiate his claim. And Rav Abba could agree with Rava. And that as long as you bring the Eidim, it's adequate. The Yad Ramah says there's a difference between the Gemara Masechta Shavuos and Al Gemara. He says the Gemara Masechta Shavuos, when the borrower said, he said that he paid in front of Eidim, what he said was, "Didn't I pay you in the presence of Pliny and Ploni?" And he said like a degree of doubt. Therefore, Rava was willing to ignore what the witnesses didn't know and assume that the borrower himself wasn't sure that the Eidim were there. And therefore, the fact that the Eidim say, "We don't know what you're talking about," is not a problem. In Al Gemara, however, what Rava said was, "I paid you in the presence of Pliny and Pliny." Since he emphatically claimed that he paid in front of those Eidim, Rav Abba will hold the halach is, you have to produce those Eidim, and those Eidim have to corroborate your claim. Amalei, V'amar Rav Gidla Marav, halach divrei Rav Shimon Gamliel, the halach follows Rav Shimon Gamliel. So, why do you have to bring the Eidim? V'af Rebbe, even Rebbe Lo Amar El Levarer, which the Rishonim explain as follows. It makes sense, the Gemara is asking, to follow the opinion of Rav Shimon Gamliel that you don't have to bring the Eidim. Why? Because the only reason we're saying you have to bring the Eidim is because you volunteered information that you weren't required to volunteer. That you volunteered information that you had Eidim when you really didn't have Eidim, when you didn't have to say it. So it doesn't make sense that because you spoke so much, you should be so punished. Furthermore, some explain, because it's only l'chatchila if you make a claim you have to back it up. But with the Eved you don't have to. So why do you say that you have to back it up? Amalei, so he said to Rav Abba, "Anon nami levar kamin." I also meant that only you have to bring the Eidim to corroborate your claim, because I hold the halacha does follow Rebbe, and if you make a claim, you have to back it up. Says the Mishnah, Mishapar mixes chayvay, if somebody paid up part of his debt. And as the Rishonim point out, firstly, from our Mishnah we learn that a person has the right to make a claim that he paid to pay off part of his debt, and the Malvo can say, "Unless you pay me in full, I don't want to take your money." Furthermore, we learned in the Mishnah earlier in our Perek that there's an approach what to do. Take the shtar and leave it by a third party. Here, the Malvo and the Loiva can't agree on a shalish by whom to leave the shtar by. So we have a machlokes. What should be done? Rabbi Yehuda, I'm a yachlef. He should write a new shtar. machlokes rishonim, and we'll discuss this more in the Gemara, what date the new shtar should have, the original date or the current date. Rav Yossi on the other hand says yichtov shoiver, we write a receipt for the amount paid and not touch the original shtar. Or Rabbi Huda, nimtzat zat tzarich liyos shoiver menachbarim. But according to what you're saying, the loiva will have to hold on to the shoiver and watch it, because he knows that if he loses the shoiver, he's going to have to end up paying the entire debt. Amar Rabbi Yossi, says Rabbi Yossi, kach yofaloi. It's appropriate that the loiva should have to hold on to the shoiver, even though it represents that he has to watch it, rather than hurt the power of the malva. Because Rabbi Yossi's opinion is that it's better that the loiva should have the pressure of watching the shoiver, and that pressure will cause him to pay off his debt quicker, versus the malva getting a new shtar, which, as the Mefarshim explained, certainly we hold that the new shtar is written with a later date, so then the malva gets hurt, and we prefer that the malva get, that the loiva be in a worse position than the malva be in a worse position. That's one way of explaining. Another way of explaining is that the loiva should be meshubed to the malva. Since the loiva, why should the loiva be meshubed to the malva? Because the malva did the loiva toiva, that he lent the money. And therefore we want to create a situation that the malva should want to continue lending money to the loiva, and that's why the loiva gets the shoiver instead of changing the malva's shtar. Machlokes achronim, what is the exactly at what point of the obligation is our Mishnah referring to? The Urim V'Tumim says that it's referring to even after the Zman Piron, after the due date came and the loiva was only able to pay off part of his loan. We had Machlokes Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yossi, what to do. The Sivus disagrees. He says if it was past the due date, there would be no question that we do everything on behalf of the malva. Algemar is referring, he says, to a situation before the due date. But then there's another question, which I was thinking myself when I learned the Mishnah. Why is there machloikus, write a shoiver, write a new shtar? Why don't we make a notation on the shtar itself, that it was paid off partially? So the Shach says a very simple teretz. He says there's no room on the document for such a notation. It's a simple teretz, but it's a hard teretz to understand, because then the Mishnah should have made that distinction if there is or isn't room on the shtar to write that in. The Tosfos Rid says we're concerned that the malva who's holding on to the shtar may tamper with that notation, and the only way to avoid him tampering from that notation is by having that notation inserted above the signature of the Edom. But there are two problems with having that notation inserted above the signature of the Edom. Number one, it's false, because the Edom weren't necessarily those Edom that testified and saw the partial payment. Furthermore, even if we will be able to find the same Edom to testify to the partial payment, we need to be concerned, and we discussed this concern earlier in our perek, that the person, that the Besdin will assume that the signature of the Edom only is relevant or relative to the partial payment and not to everything else it says in the shtar. And therefore that Eitzah of making the notation on the shtar itself isn't given in our Mishnah. Says the Gemara, Amar v'hun Amar Rav, Ein halacha like Rabbi Yehuda v'like Rabbi Yossi, the halacha is not like Rabbi Yehuda v'like Rabbi Yossi, El Besdin mekarnes a shtar, Besdin rip up the shtar, the kostel and shtar achem is manrishin, they write a new shtar from the first date. The Mefarshim discuss how Rav, who's an Amira, could disagree both with the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi. Amira is not allowed to argue with a Tana. So some Mefarshim explain that Rav said, I had a different version of what the halacha is under such circumstances. Others say Rav Tana Upaluk. The Rav is a Tana and he has the right to disagree. But I saw a very beautiful vort that Rav Chaim said to Rabbi Chanan in explaining this concept of Rav Tanahu Upolik. Because it's really hard to understand. If Rav was a Tana, so we always understand that Rav Tanahu Upolik was, the Rav lived in the generation that bridged the Tanoim Tamaroim, and in certain circumstances is considered a Tana, and in certain circumstances is considered an Amora. But Rav Chaim explained to Rav Chanan differently. He says the truth is an Amora is really allowed to argue on a Tana. We find throughout Shas that the Gemara says, how can a Amora argue on a Tana? It means because if the Gemara is assuming that if the Amora was aware of the opinion of the Tana, he would never argue with the Tana. But in a case such as ours, says Rav Chaim, where a Rav knew the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi, and even though he was aware of their opinion, he held that they were wrong, even a person who Rav, who's only an Amora, has the right to argue with Tanoim, a Chiddush from Rav Chaim.